My name's Adam Mason. I'm an Iowa CCI member and have been an Iowa CCI organizer for just over 12 years. Abby Landheis is with me. She's an Iowa CCI member and organizer. We both live and work out of our Des Moines office now. But personally, I grew up in Storm Lake, way up in northwest Iowa, on a family farm. Grandpa farmed. Our family had 12 acres. My dad was a construction worker, but we had, 100, 150 head of hogs that we pasture raised until he got pushed out in the mid-90s. Yeah.
What does CCI stand for?
CCI, thank you, Deborah, is Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. And what that means is Iowa CCI is a membership organization. We're a statewide organization. We have over 5,000 dues-paying members across the state, and we communicate with probably about another 13 or 14,000 folks just like you who are concerned about the factory farm issue, about clean water, and about a lot of other issues too. This is not the only issue we work on. We consider ourselves an economic justice organization. We consider ourselves a racial justice organization because all of our fights are intertwined. That means that we stand up when there's racial profiling. We stand up when there's injustice against our immigrant brothers and sisters, against our native brothers and sisters. And it means that we stand up when there's injustice against in our communities. So that's why we're all here tonight. And I want to thank you all for going around the room and sharing why you're here. We are going to, so everybody's got an agenda packet. I know we're running a little short on chairs. There are a few open ones if folks want to work their way in. There's one right down here in the front row. Everybody always loves the front row. But we're going to hear from a couple folks. So the first thing we want to do is just make sure that we're all on the same page about what's being proposed and, kind of what we know so far and what the process is moving forward. So we're going to take a little bit of time to talk about that. We can take some questions. Also, I want to make sure we get everybody to sign in because there will be information that we send out after tonight. We can send out some follow-up information. I heard a lot of concerns about health concerns and air quality concerns and water, property values. We've got the studies and a lot of the data that we can send out to folks after this meeting. So if you signed in, make sure if you have an email address that you put that on there. That lets us get back in touch with you and get you some of this critical information. Because then that's going to help us take to the next step on our agenda, which is what comes next, right? What we're going to do about this, what we're going to do moving forward. And we'll kind of get into, like Dr. Spencer said, some of the strategy moving forward. And then we just want to close out because this problem isn't brand new to Iowa. It's been something that's happening over the last 20, 25 years as our state's changed. We've gone from having, 30 years ago, having 54,000 family farms raising livestock to having 10,000 factory farms today. So it hasn't happened overnight, and it's not going to change overnight. And I heard a lot of people say that the matrix is broken. We're going to talk more about that at the very end of the meeting. But we'll start off right now with just kind of talking about what we know so far about these proposals. And I'm going to ask Deborah to come up. Deborah, you are one of the neighbors. I heard a lot of folks who are living very close to these factory farms, proposed sites. Deborah's going to kind of get us started, and then we'll just kind of have a group session where we can kind of get everybody on the same page.
Okay. We live currently a half a mile south of one on 670th Avenue. We've been in our house for 22 years, and 15, 16 years ago, we noticed some strange activity up in the field north of us, and it's 8 o'clock at night on a summer night, and there's tractors and all kinds of things going on up there. We couldn't figure out what they were doing. We were hoping for new neighbors. When I rode up there the next day on my horse, and what I saw were big pits. We found out shortly after that from our neighbors to the south of us that it was going to be hog confinements. We had no notice whatsoever. We found out through the grapevine. Of course, the Board of Supervisors did their due diligence, and I use the term loosely. They had a meeting up in McCallsburg, and Fred Matteson sat there and told us, well, you just need to suck it up because we're not going to do anything to help you. They're not good neighbors.
That's right.
They smell. We're close enough, we can hear them. The pigs, the hogs that get to fighting and screaming and carrying on. At 10 o'clock at night, it's a creepy, eerie sound. The smell is atrocious. I've had to completely change the way that I live, and it completely negated one of the reasons that we wanted to live in the country. I can't have my windows open in my house. I one time I went to work and that beautiful day, come home and the stench was all through my house. I can't hang my laundry outside anymore. Did that one time. Had to rewash everything. We've had to cancel family get-togethers because the smell is so bad. I don't want my grandchildren out there. When you know, when your dog goes outside, spends 2 minutes and once back in, the smell is really bad. We have seen so many changes. The big thing now that I've noticed is the traffic on our road when they're hauling that manure. Those guys run down that gravel road 60 miles an hour. We're pretty close to the corner. They get about to our house, they start engine braking. Scares the horses, scares the dog, rattles the windows in my house, and they just keep on going. They don't look back. And it's increasing. All the time, it's increasing. They load those hogs 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. We can hear them. And they make no apologies as they're on the way to the bank to cash their checks. The new one that's going in is going to be a little further away from us, but it's going to be to the south. So I have every expectation that this is going to impact us further, because on the days I'm not getting the smell from the north, I'm going to get it from the south. I'm concerned about our quality of life. I have allergies too. I don't even eat pork. I'm allergic to it. So, you know, to have all of this going on is just infuriating. And the thing that bothers me the most, I have no voice. They can come out and dump this in my backyard, and I have no voice. I have no rights. This is going to affect my quality of life. It's going to affect my property values. And don't listen to these stories about, well, you know, houses next close to these turkey confinements and hog confinements, you know, they're getting more. Look at the numbers. They're not telling you real value. They're going on assessed value. So it's a numbers game, and it's smoke and mirrors. And the more I research and the more I read, the less happy I am with our Board of Supervisors. They are not here to speak for us. At least two of them are not here to speak for us. They are in this like other politicians, which needs to change. And in order to get a change, it starts with us. So we have to use our voices. We have to stand up for ourselves. We have to stand up for our children and our grandchildren. They are going to be the ones who pay the ultimate price. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. That's amazing. And I know a lot of folks share your concerns. We heard from a couple folks who kind of share your story, who are already living next to a factory farm, and a lot of folks who are concerned about living next to one. Just a few things that we know about these proposals. So there's three factory farm finishing operations, right? Each of these proposed sites will house 5,000 hogs at once for a total of 15,000 hogs. Together, those 15,000 hogs, when you cycle those through 2.5 times a year, because essentially they'll keep the building full, they'll have their 5,000 in there. We've heard from a lot of members actually around the state that they think that the buildings are overpopulated, meaning there's more than 5,000 in there. But I'll just give you a heads up that the DNR does not have the staff to go in and count. What we do know is they would be permitted, if approved, permitted to have 5,000 hogs in there at any given time. They'll get 2.5 litters through there every year. So it takes about 5 months to raise a hog to slaughter. So they'll run it through, and then the one day after they take them out to the slaughterhouse, they'll clean it and get the baby hogs in there the next day, as soon as possible. They want to churn them out as fast as they can. Those 15,000 hogs, 2.5 times over the course of a year, will create 3.8 million gallons of liquid manure. 3.8 million gallons of liquid manure. I heard some people comparing that to what the town of Nevada or the town of Ames creates. On average, a hog creates about 2.5 times as much waste as a person. And somebody back there said it is this gets dumped untreated onto the farm fields. Now, again, I grew up on a family farm, and we had dry bedded manure. You know, when they would come in the barn during the coldest nights, they were dry bedded, and that was heavy. It wouldn't run off. This was liquid manure. And we're going to talk about this in a little bit, that they're going to knife it. Now, again, our regulations here in Iowa are so weak that there's nobody out there monitoring the applicators. And again, we've heard from members all across the state that they fear that it's over applied. And like right now, you go outside, the ground's frozen. But right now, you can still apply liquid manure. And in the fall where crops came out late, there were lots of these factory farms trying to applicate on the frozen ground. We do have a winter ban, but that doesn't go into effect until December 21st. Okay? We heard kind of about the location, and in your packet, we've got some information in there that you can take home with you. On the very back of that is a current map of the CAFOs here in Story County. And I believe if you flip to the side that says north half of Story County, that's a fancy new computer font there, by the way. The north half of Story County, just north of Nevada, you can kind of see two gray shaded circles that don't have a name by them. You see that if you kind of know the townships you're looking for? That's where the two proposed here in just outside of Nevada would be, and then one further north in Richland 10, I believe, right? As you can see, this is again, and I love the way that Deborah told us, a lot of folks don't find out they're going to be living next to a factory farm, that they're getting new neighbors, 15,000 new neighbors, until the building starts. We are ahead of the game right now because we know ahead of time, and we've got a supervisor's hearing ahead of us next week. But before we get there, I do want to bring up Carolyn Raffensperger from the Science and Environmental Health Network. Did I say that right, Carolyn?
You did.
All right. Who paired a white paper for us on some of the health impacts from factory farms.
So a lot of you saw the recent news stories about Des Moines going, what's that smell? Yes. And you saw news articles in the paper and elsewhere. And if you were living anywhere in Story County, you also wondered just how long that pig smell was going to go on. Like others, I was not able to hang my laundry out that day. So I thought that it would be useful to actually prepare something about the health effects from air emissions. I think that we're well aware of the consequences of water and what we're doing to water that's been, you know, well documented. It's being litigated. We've got a lot going on in terms of water pollution with CAFOs and other issues in agriculture. But specifically with air emissions, I thought it would be useful to just document what we know. And I want to start out by saying that our sense of smell is one of the most important biological warning signals, senses that we've got. If you are standing behind a diesel bus, you don't need to go and get Iowa State to do a study about whether it's good for you or not. You know it's not good for you to stand behind a diesel bus. Similarly, that smell of hog confinement smells awful. It is telling us something that is biologically accurate, and that is that this is not healthy. So what is being emitted by the hog farms? There are three things you want to look at. The first is particulate matter. You know, that manure can become airborne, and particles of that can be carried fairly long distances. Particulate matter increases respiratory problems. It can increase asthma and other things. So we know that there is a higher risk of asthma near to a CAFO. It's a key concern, you know, the particulate matter. There are chemicals that are emitted that are toxic. So you don't want to be breathing ammonia. You don't want to be breathing hydrogen sulfide. A couple of years ago, pigs were killed because there was bad ventilation and it was the hydrogen sulfide. And they actually had to go to University of Iowa and say, well, you know, we're not really sure that it's a problem to humans. That's idiocy. That's ignoring basic toxicology for these particular chemicals. So the fact sheet has a list of those. We know that respiratory ailments increase near CAFOs. The third thing that we need to pay attention to has to do with the microbial life that can become airborne and can move fairly long distances. And the reason for that is a lot of the diseases that pigs have, there are diseases that pigs have that can cross over to other animals and humans. But as important is the vast use of antibiotics in order to keep a population that's too crowded from getting sick. And so the huge use of antibiotics that are also used in human populations leads to antibiotic resistance. And so we know that the MRSA infections are more common among the antibiotic-resistant infections are more common among CAFO workers, and we can assume among the nearby population. Are we prepared in Story County to see an increase in asthma? Are we ready for an increase in respiratory ailments? And are we ready for the increase in all of the biological stress responses that you have when exposed to screaming pigs or to that noxious odor? You know, when everything is telling you things are not going well. So when I moved to Iowa, I was told this is the smell of money. And I thought, no, it's the smell of disease. It is a smell that is warning you to get away from this problem. And do not be fooled by or minimize it when the health studies show, and that fact sheet describes, that you're going to have an increase in headaches, you're going to have an increase in some neurological phenomena, you're going to have alterations in your immune system. So it may not affect you very much, but as a population-wide effect, it's going to have an increase in hospitalizations, in missing school, in missing work. And we are not prepared for economic development, which is going to increase your co-pays at Mary Greeley. That's not the kind of economic development that we're looking for. So you can scan this sheet and look at the health effects. Don't minimize them when they say you're going to have increases in headaches or, you know, stress responses. Don't minimize those. Those are real public health issues that we need to take seriously. If you want to think about what government is for, mostly what we hear is that it's to grow the economy and to jobs. But I would submit to you that government's responsibility is a fiduciary duty to care for the things that we share. Public health is part of that fundamental duty of government to protect. When someone have an increase in respiratory problems or asthma in our community or antibiotic resistance in our community that could have been prevented, then we have had an abrogation of the fundamental duties that government must take seriously. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Carolyn. So as Carolyn mentioned, there's a fact sheet that her organization has put together in that packet for you to take home. I want to talk about something she ended on there, too, because I share Carolyn's viewpoint that government does have a role to play. I know a lot of us feel like government's not working right now. I would say it is working. It just ain't working for us. Okay? Because there's a reason that this factory farm can submit their proposal, and essentially, without us standing up, it would be swept through like that, right? There's a reason that is that way. And there's a reason, I heard a number of you talk about the master matrix. There's a reason that the matrix is broken. It was made that way because big ag interests knew that if they wrote it that way and if they worked with legislators to write it that way, it would be smooth sailing for them for the near future. But absolutely, government has a role to play, and we're going to talk about that. So there were a couple other things just I want to hit on. We do know that factory farms impact property values. I heard, and I want to thank again the elected officials who are here tonight. Thank you for being here and from hearing from your community members. That's one of the things that makes government start to work for us is having the right people in office. So property taxes are affected. We did not bring any of that with us, but essentially if you live within 2 miles of a factory farm, property values can go down as much as 30%. For a lot of folks that have been living in their rural community, that home's their nest egg, or part a big piece of their nest egg, or in some cases they want to pass it on. And unfortunately, the county assessor doesn't always see it that way. They don't necessarily go back and change the property values, but when you actually go to sell your home, that's when you'll see the impact. And we will, like I said, make sure you get signed up on our email list because we will forward out that information. There was a study back in 2002 that pointed that out. And so that was even 16 years ago that study was out, and that was before the proliferation that we've had now. There's also just one other study that I think we'll send out. It's a good kind of overview. If folks have heard of the Iowa Policy Project, they're based over in Iowa City. Just earlier this year, they put out kind of a comprehensive study that identified concerns about air quality, water quality, property values, county revenues, a number of other issues that we associate problems with factory farms. And they gave us a couple policy recommendations. One of those we're going to talk about again in just a little bit, a moratorium on factory farms. So we will talk about that, but I do just real quick, are there any other questions about these proposed sites right now? Because I'm going to transition into talking specifically about the master matrix proposals that each of these factory farms has submitted. So any other just general questions? Irv?
How many acres or how many square miles of land is needed to spread that 3.2 million gallons of
manure? Brenda and Deborah, did either of you plug in on the manure mapping project? Deborah did.
Yeah.
So Deborah can speak to this too. We did a sample of five different counties in 2015, and we pulled every manure management plan, and what I can tell you is it varies. It varies on how much land the factory farm developer has and wants to spread it on. And it varies on the application rates. There's all kinds of kind of formulas that supposedly consultants like Pinnacle are helping, in this case, the Henrys figure out. But essentially, what it boils down to is how much manure do they have to get rid of and how much land do they have? Because they're not testing it.
You are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Today's program is featuring a public meeting concerning CAFOs, or Confinement Animal Feeding Operations, in Story County. The meeting was coordinated by the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, or ICCI, as a result of application on the day after the midterm elections for three new 5,000-head CAFOs in Story County. Now back to the fact-finding proceedings.
So the question was, have there been studies just about if this is ideal, an ideal way to raise hogs, and if where would be the ideal place to put them? There have been studies. One of the things that we hear the industry say is that, oh, this is modern farming, you know, it's climate-controlled building. You know, they don't have to be outside where it's cold. 30 years ago, pigs were an outdoor animal, right? They could live that. They had body fat, that's right. But they've been genetically engineered and genetically bred to get as fat as possible, as quick as possible. So the hogs that are actually inside these buildings would not survive outside. It would take more of a heritage breed to go back outside to pasture raising hogs. And I think for me, I don't want to speak for anybody in this room, but for me, the ideal place to put a factory farm is nowhere. Because everywhere is someone's backyard, and I don't think anybody should have to put up with it. And for me, it gets back to the economic interest, too. Is if you look at one of the backbones of our rural communities was family farms that were diversified. You know, they had crop operations. They also had 10, 50, maybe 100 cattle, and they had 100 head of hog. And there were local buying stations and local vets and all the infrastructure that it takes to support that kind of diversified family agriculture. We don't have that anymore. The buying stations are gone. The local vet, that's a company vet now, that can hit a dozen of these buildings in one day and make sure that the drugs in the feed is right. So, you know, that would be my opinion. I don't think there is a right place for them. I'm sure there's some people that would argue with me on that. And at CCI, we have actually taken off points for some of those things I just mentioned. We subtracted points for them having a roof because in their plan, they have to have a design, operation, and maintenance plan. And in their plan, they said someone on site will monitor the roof. Someone on site will monitor the concrete to make sure there's no cracks. I told you my dad's in construction. He actually runs a concrete plant now. And it's a joke between us that there's two kinds of concrete, the kind that's cracked and the kind that's going to crack, right? You know, they don't say who's going to do that or what training they're going to get. Or even how do you do that when there's manure that's 8 foot deep in that concrete pit on one side and dirt on the other? How do you do that? They don't say that. We don't think that they should get points for not having a violation because you know what? They didn't tell us. They said that this is going to be their family's operation. Well, they don't own any sows, and these are 5,000 head finisher units, so those 5,000 hogs in each building are coming from somewhere. And we don't know what corporation is putting the hogs in the building. Until we know that, and we know that that company doesn't have any environmental or worker violations, they shouldn't get the points. That's what we think. Does that sound right to you all?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you take all of those points off that we are suggesting that we submitted already to the supervisors and that review committee, that means 105 points would come off of each of those proposals, and each one would be down in the 300s, and each one would fail. Okay?
Woo!
You know what? We actually sent a letter to the supervisors, too, showing that in the past, there's a couple counties that have done that, and the DNR agreed with them and denied the application. One other thing to flag, somebody else mentioned this, and I just want to hit on it real quick. Somebody said this, 98% of the factory farm applications the DNR reviews pass. That is absolutely correct. Again, the rules have been written in favor of factory farms. 2% fail, a number are withdrawn. So a lot of this comes down to showing up next Tuesday and talking to our supervisors, getting them to take points off the matrix. But I'm going to have Abby come up real quick and actually talk about this process and start talking about what we can do to make maximum impact heard. Jessica.
All right. So we have talked about the sites. We've talked about the master matrix on what we object to. Now I'm kind of going to tell you where we are in the process, what happened in November, what we can do next week. So the process is usually 30 days from the application being submitted. Of course, since Thanksgiving happened, we were granted one extra week, which we are very thankful for. The applications were submitted on November 7th, which is very convenient that it was one day after the election, that they didn't want to wait until Linda started in January. So they were submitted on November 7th. The applications were accepted by the board on the 20th. And right now, they're in the process of reviewing the applications themselves. Like Adam said, we emailed them our objections to the master matrix. And they have a public hearing next week. We're going to talk a little more about that next. And then their final decision for the recommendation, of course, we're pushing for a denial, is December 13th. So we are kind of on a time constraint here. Yep, it's very fishy altogether that they didn't submit one, they didn't submit two, but they submitted all three at one time to add to the workload of the county. So from the article being published yesterday, we can all assume that the family is getting heat. They're feeling the heat from the community, and that's on you. Thank you so much for doing that, because they have an option of just, you know, pulling their application, which, you know, would make everyone's life easier. So they are feeling the heat. One option of responding to the article posted yesterday is to write an LTE. As a response to that, added an example that she wrote one a couple weeks ago. But you can use that as an example of kind of how to write an LTE. The letter to the editor. Thank you. Yes, you're right. You can also contact supervisors by phone and email. I made a contact list of the Scott family, DNR, and also the county supervisors. Go ahead and shoot them an email of why they should deny the applications. Y'all have been excellent at getting petition signatures. For our online petition, we have over 100 signatures, and we've been getting the paper hard copies back with lots of signatures, so thank you. Continue to do that. We have an empty petition on the back of the packet. I think it's the last sheet. Go ahead and just rip that off and get as many signatures as you can and bring them to the meeting next week so we can show the supervisors who all is actually opposed.
You are listening on Heart of Iowa to speakers at a community meeting at the Nevada Public Library on Tuesday evening, December 4th. Around 100 residents from Ames, Nevada, and surrounding rural areas gathered for a community meeting. and the topic for discussion was three applications that were made with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to build hog confinement lots in Story County, just north of Nevada. The applications for the three separate hog confinement lots were filed by Scott, Kyle, and Eric Henry, owners of Longview Pork, LLC. The community meeting was called by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, ICCI, a statewide organization that claims to give Iowan citizens a voice. Adam Mason, an ICCI organizer, led the meeting, presenting various concerns and encouraging participants at the meeting to show up at the meeting of the County Board of Supervisors when they will hold a hearing on Tuesday, December 11th at 9:30. The Board of Supervisors can recommend the acceptance or denial of the permits to the Department of Natural Resources, which makes the final decision on the permits.
Fortunately, the way that Iowa's laws are written, legally we don't have a lot of recourse until after the factory farm is built, and then it's going to be folks who live the closest and their ability to file a nuisance lawsuit for damages to their, if they're on well water, air quality, and property values. We've tried legal injunctions in the past. That does not work. Now, one thing you can do is ask your supervisors to delay the decision because of the holidays, because they need more time to review this and they want to dig in more. Again, the way that the law is written, the DNR can request one extension if they need more time. The developer of the factory farm can request multiple extensions, but the county has to ask the developer if they can delay. So the supervisors could, this is one more thing the supervisors could do, is they could ask the Henrys and the DNR for more time. They could do that. Now they've said, yeah, that's right, I heard somebody say it.
How much time you can ask, though?
1 month, an additional month. They would probably say no. Yep. So, you know, that's something that if you want to do, we can. I think probably given what the supervisors have been saying, that they're unlikely to give that delay, we're best just going after a denial. Now, I know that the supervisors here, there's kind of just doing a power analysis of where the supervisors are right now. If I had to guess, I would say there's probably two that would vote to approve and one who would vote to deny. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but given what I know, that's kind of what...
Luke Spence.
So what I will say is that one of the last campaigns that we worked on, it was with Ava, another organizer up in Calhoun County in northwest Iowa. Calhoun County had never denied a factory farm application in the last 12 years that I've been here. There was a proposed factory farm, 5,000 head, just like this one, a mile outside of the town of Lowerville. Lowerville's a little town, 362 people. And we went up there, we had a meeting just like this at the Lowerville Library, a little bit smaller than the Nevada's, and eight folks showed up. And they worked their tails off, they hit every door in Lowerville, they got over 200 folks to sign their petition. We turned out 50 people to the Calhoun County supervisors. It's the most people that have been to a Calhoun County meeting in a couple years. They moved. They've got their little room where the supervisors meet. And we had to go to the courtroom. It was kind of cool. And everybody testified that day, and the supervisors recommended denial. And they tripped all over themselves trying to say, we're not opposed to agriculture. And, you know, we like this here in Calhoun County, but this was just too close to Lowerville. We have to recommend denial. So what I'm trying to tell you is there is hope, and supervisors can be swayed, okay? We have to arm ourselves with kind of some facts and some knowledge, but we have to show up, and that's what Abby was talking about. And so that's why we're asking you to help us with the petitions, because, again, the supervisors up in Calhoun County took note that over two-thirds of Lowerville did not want this factory farm. And I think from what I heard tonight, folks showing up, next Tuesday at 10 a.m., just two blocks that way, right? At the county courthouse, that way?
Administration building.
Administration building.
Yeah, the old courthouse.
The old courthouse. Very good. That's good to know. Otherwise, I would have been at the wrong place. but Barb, showing up and telling them that you're going to have to live next to this, and you don't want to deal with the air quality. That's right. That's right. And Deborah, you showing up and sharing what you live with day in, day out. Right? Becky, showing up and talking about health concerns. Megan, talking about the impacts on selling homes here and the impacts to children and everything that we're going to have to live with. Hearing directly from you is so important, and the supervisors need to hear that. And then every one of us needs to stress that they do have the power to do something, that they need to recommend denial, they need to take points off the matrix, and that they need to tell the Henrys to withdraw your proposal. Does that sound like reasonable demands?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Very good. So I just real quick, I do want to ask, you know, Abby said writing letters to the editor. This is a way that between now and next week, we can start to show how opposed to these factory farms the community is. So just a show of hands, who knows right now that they can write a letter to the editor in the next day or two? Mark, and I don't know everybody's names yet. Doesn't have to be long. In fact, less than 200 words, even better. So let me see those hands again. Social media, absolutely. That's right. Email them. Okay, we got letters to the editor. So can everybody agree to, between now and next Tuesday, try and contact the supervisors, whether it's on Facebook, email, or phone? We see a show of hands. Can everybody do that? All right, very good. The petition. Who can talk to somebody? Either a neighbor, talk to somebody at church, talk to somebody in a book club, talk to somebody at the coffee shop. Can everybody do that and have them sign? All right, and bring those, and we will compile all of them. Look for Abby and I next Tuesday at the administration building, and we will compile all those and find somebody to deliver those to the supervisors.
Are you guys on Twitter?
We are on Twitter. It's not on there? This is an old letterhead. I'm sorry. If you look at @IowaCCI on Twitter, or Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement on Facebook. In fact, I already tweeted out a picture of the room tonight. Very good. One other thing, too, you know, in the story that was in the Ames Trib, one of the closing lines was that the Henrys are welcoming input from the community. And they've got their phone number in there, and it's the same phone number that's on our contact sheet. I would recommend you call them directly and tell them, you know, because, like, what they're going to say is, oh, This is Adam down in Des Moines, and all those folks down in Des Moines don't want this. We're just here because you folks, we heard from a number of you folks in the community that we wanted to come, we wanted to get organized, we wanted to put a plan together. So it's not going to be me calling them, it's got to be you all calling the Henrys and letting them know that you don't like this proposal, ask them to withdraw it. Can we do that? Does that sound good? Very good. Okay. So real quick, Mark, in like 5 minutes or less. Very good. Mark's going to just talk a little bit. So Mark isn't his first rodeo. And Mark's just going to talk real quick about the importance of staying in this for the long haul.
I'm Mark Harris. I live in Milford Township, and I live right on E29 and just 300 feet away from West Indian Creek. And I was involved in the resistance with the Shomlin CAFO application 4.5 years ago. I'm a mile south of him, his CAFO operation, but the land right across the road from me, 200 feet from my house, is part of his matrix. And this fall, the wind was out of the south for 3 days. My house inside was just unbelievably bad. It was incredible. And on Thanksgiving, another beautiful day, couldn't be outside. So I live the experience that many of you, unfortunately, may start living. The resistance must continue because the reality, as we know, it's highly probable that it will pass. But if it passes, when's the next one? And the next one, and the next one, and the next one. We aren't even close to what some people think the maximum could be in this state. And so when's the last one going to be approved? When are we going to actually start studying scientifically and publicly the effects that this has on our environment? I could talk for a long time. I've done a lot of research. I read a thesis today from 1963 on hog confinements. And at that time, Iowa was producing 20 million hogs. We're at 50 million annually right now and growing. I don't know what the upper limit is. It feels like we're way beyond it myself. So the resistance is beyond next Tuesday. The resistance is to get new supervisors to come out and support reevaluation, a redesign of the matrix, to come out and support future opposition towards siting more CAFOs in Story County and in the state. And that means we have to continue to put pressure on them. It can't just stop next Tuesday in defeat. It'll be real easy to, but we're not the only ones affected. It's a divide and conquer situation. There's this small group, it happens, it goes to the next one, and it goes to the next one. And I think we have to create a statewide effort to stop this. So don't be discouraged.
There's also a private Facebook group where folks are communicating, Stop Longview Pork. So I think if you search for that, and then who's kind of adminning that? Right back there, very good. So connect there if you want to get connected to that Stop Longview Pork Facebook group. And maybe, Abby, we could get on that too. We can post the information from tonight up there too. That would be good. Moving forward, so we've got the hearing on Tuesday. What time is that?
10 a.m.
10 a.m., very good. Again, it's not the best time for folks who work, but if you can get away, take an early lunch, show up, speak out, and then we'll keep folks posted on what happens. I think everybody should be able to. You do have to sign up. We ran out. That's a good problem to have. We can definitely make sure that we send out links to that. With Supervisor Chitty being outgoing supervisor, possibly running again in the future, let's think about that and putting pressure there. I absolutely agree, Seldon. I think it's like, we got to get there early. Abby and I will plan to be up here by 9 that morning, so that we can kind of gather petitions and we'll compile all those. But absolutely, by 9:30, we need to be taking those front row seats. So in 1995, our legislature passed House File 519, and that is essentially what set up the factory farm permitting program that we have today. There's been some changes. There were some changes in 2002. There's been some changes since then. But essentially, back in 1995, they said that the DNR will issue all the permits for factory farms, and counties shouldn't be able to do anything about it. So in 1998, we worked with a county up in, it was Humboldt County, to do zoning ordinances, saying that they would have local control and they could zone where factory farms can build. The factory farm industry sued the county. It went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, nope, you can't do that. So in 2002, Worth County said, well, we think it's a public health issue. We're going to pass public health ordinances and zone factory farms because they're a public health nuisance. Again, the factory farm industry sued the county and said, we don't like this. Went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court agreed with the industry. So a county could try and pass a moratorium. It would likely end up in court and be overruled, which is why we need to change our state laws. There again, counties are going to say there's not much they can do. But like Mark was pointing out, and I believe this actually came up in the campaign, is that there's a number of counties, just like you folks, who are feeling like they don't have enough say and they want the laws to change. And so one of the things that we've been doing at CCI is getting counties to go on the record. Go on the record and say that the master matrix is broken. Go on the record and say you want local control. And go on the record and say we've got too many factory farms. There's too much manure and air pollution. We need a moratorium. We don't need any more factory farms until we can regulate the ones we got. And so there's 24 counties in Iowa that have passed those. And if you look at this, these are not like the urban hotbeds of liberalism, right? This is Emmett County and Palo Alto and Pocahontas County. Hardin County even passed one. Adair County, Fremont, down in the very southwest corner, okay? These are rural counties primarily where they're sick and tired of being inundated by factory farms. Enough is enough. We got to do something about it. And our state legislature will be back in session on January 14th. So one of the things that we can start laying the groundwork for, now, absolutely, Tuesday we got to stay focused on stopping this factory farm. But moving ahead, we got to change the system that's letting this happen. Otherwise, what's going to happen is there's a line right here. That's the line between Hardin and Story County. Hardin has been welcoming them in arms open. There's a new packing plant that's going to be coming online in Wright County next year. The Prestige packing plant is going to be firing up, and they want to fill two shifts where they slaughter 10,000 hogs a day. That means they're going to need more factory farms to fill those shifts. And right now, the places that they're looking are all across north central Iowa. because it's not that far to ship them, you know, to truck them to Wright County. You got the interstates, you got New 20, New 30. So we're going to be looking at more of these in the very near future. It's time for our counties to take a stand, but we got to draw a line in the sand right now. We have to come together as a community to fight this. I'm telling you right now, we will be here with you fighting these tooth and nail, working just as hard as you to stop these from building. Stop them on Tuesday. Stop them in a month. Stop them in 5 months, 6 months, 7 months. Stop them at the state house. Stop them here at the county. We have to fight on all fronts. And, you know, there's been a lot of questions about legal strategies. Unfortunately, when we target just one factory farm, it's hard to get them. You know, the legal option there is a nuisance lawsuit. But we are looking at legal strategies to stop the industry as a whole and make it much, much harder for them to continue building and polluting our air and our water. Okay. You know, we let you know when there might be a meeting with your elected officials here in town, what bills are coming up at the state house, when you can have a big impact by emailing your legislator, and of course, all the technical assistance that we're getting here tonight. So it is 8 o'clock, and I want to be respectful of time. Again, we'll see you all next Tuesday at what time?
10 a.m.
What time?
9:30.
9:30? Right? Okay. This doesn't end because after the supervisors make their decision next week and send that to the DNR, the DNR takes 30 days to review. Now, if our supervisors recommend denial, but the DNR goes ahead and approves it, we can go back to the supervisors and they can appeal that to the state's Environmental Protection Commission. I'm not going to lie, that's another uphill battle, but that's one we want to fight if we have to. Okay? So, and that by then it'll be January. That's right. That's absolutely right. So Tuesday, deny this factory farm, and let's get to it, okay? Thank you.
I am from Nevada. I live about a mile and a half from where they plan on putting these, and I'm not happy about my family's health in all of this. It's very concerning. I'm very concerned about the runoff and the fecal matter in it. The Henrys own this property north of town, and I'm guessing this is where they're going to spread their manure. And it's about a mile from where two of their proposed sites are at. The runoff from the fields north of town go across T Avenue where it's gravel, which floods into Harrington Park underneath the railroad tracks. And that water goes across Lincoln Way into the middle school playground. So our kids end up playing in that water. So it's very concerning.
You have been listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. And today we listened to the recording of a meeting that was held in Nevada Public Library on December 4th when around 100 residents from Ames, Nevada and surrounding rural areas gathered for a community meeting to discuss three applications that were made to build hog confinement lots in Story County, just north of Nevada. The community meeting was called by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, and Adam Mason, a ICCI organizer, led the meeting, introducing various speakers and answering questions. Thank you for listening, and remember to support your community radio station during this time of giving at the end of the year. Please go to khoifm.org to donate. Thank you.